It's Thursday, June 26th, 2014, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 68. Da-da-da-da! You got the podcast! Runtime for this episode is 51 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that is in the present. My name is Jeremy.
I have the golden power. I'm Tyler.
I prefer to live in the past. I'm Zach.
We have one of the better games I think we've ever played this week. But before we get to that, I want to give an extra special thanks to Ranger Danger for giving us a shout out this week.
They did. Sweet.
Really?
So if you haven't checked them out, go do it. They have Power Rangers goodness over there.
Well,
okay,
I
have to look that up now.
I went over to their website, and their website is pretty sweet. So I think we plugged them first.
I believe we did.
So
but,
a counter plug?
Yes.
But I want to give them another plug anyway. They're a sweet podcast.
Plug! Counter plug! Counter plug!
They inspired me to do the blog series I'm doing every other week, wherein I compare episodes of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers to their Geo Ranger counterparts.
Is it Geo Ranger or Zeo Ranger?
Geo is how they... It sounds like Jew Ranger if you don't put the accent on it, which is why you have to put the accent on it.
I don't know. I would watch Mighty Morphin Jew Rangers.
Which is, you know, it looks like Zayu Ranger, but...
Okay. Did
you not watch the opening sequence where they happily yell, Jew Ranger, Jew Ranger?
Yeah, no, I did.
The song keeps going.
But it didn't occur to me that that's what it sounded like, so that's what I get for having American ears.
Yeah. So anyway.
America.
America ears.
Thanks, guys. You keep watching Power Rangers and being Australian.
Doesn't sound like it's very hard to do, honestly.
Well, they seem to be having an endurance test lately, but...
Well, okay. I meant the being Australian part.
No,
I
that's
guess.
Probably pretty easy for them. It would be pretty hard for me, though.
But with living in America...
and being terrible at accents. And
Crikey.
Not actually knowing if it's a Melbourne or Melbourne. I believe it's supposed to be Melbourne.
I thought it was Melbourne.
That's how it's spelled.
I believe it's actually Melbourne, but
I'm
don't know.
I'm an American, therefore it is Melbourne.
No, that's not actually how anything works.
Well, I mean, it is if you live in America and there's a town called Melbourne.
That's true.
I mean,
I think there is. I think it might be in Michigan.
It's a very specific
wait, that's
case.
Dearborn.
Dearborn.
Where
anyway.
My mom's from.
Man, I haven't read Skin Game yet. Speaking of...
It's a good book, and you should read it.
Places with lakes.
A dude finds a cup, and a dude steps out of a gate, and a dude quotes Star Wars, and it's all very, very good.
This is awkward. I'm actually behind other people when it comes to a new book coming out.
I got it at 1 o'clock in the morning it came out. For free.
That does give you a bit of an advantage.
So anyway, what have you been playing, Tyler?
Me? Well, I finished Pikmin 3 recently. It's an awesome game. My only lament about it is that it's too short.
Most of the Pikmin games suffer from that.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. I think that mostly speaks to the quality of the game that I wanted to play more than that it was actually too short. I think it was probably, in terms of pacing, about the right length, but...
Well, if I remember Pikmin 1 right, main thing was, the first time around, you're basically just going to go for the basics.
The necessary components to
leave. Because you don't know exactly how to get everything. And then once you get all those the first time, I think the idea was for you to play it again... And then go to try and get everything else that you didn't get before, as well as all the necessary pieces to beat the game.
Yeah. I did get all the fruit on my first run, and apparently very few people who will play this game have, according to the end of the game stats. So, that's kind of neat.
That's cool.
Or maybe they're just trying to make you feel better.
Well, I don't know, a lot of them ended at about 40, which is how much I had when I unlocked the last area. I'm like, I bet going to that last area is going to end the game. I should go get all the fruit first. And I think a lot of people didn't realize that going there was going to end the game. So,
well, everything I've seen whenever I've beaten XCOM, they're like, hey, you lost fewer people, lost fewer countries than everyone else who's played this game. I'm like, I don't think that sounds right.
That might be right. How many people play XCOM regularly enough to, like, go and beat the game multiple times, other than you and Ed? I think that's, like, the entire population.
It's not super uncommon. Like, there are a lot of XCOM fans, and there are people who play it multiple times. But I feel like more people played it once, or played it half of once.
XCOM, totally good game. You guys should all play it.
In addition to Pikmin, I finished Layden and the Miracle Mask, finally.
Were you satisfied?
I was, except that it kind of ended on a cliffhanger, and now I want to go get the other Layden game, so...
Do you not have it already?
No, I don't.
Okay.
There is one more actual Layden game, and I'm I think, on the third case of Layden Brothers The Mystery Room.
I have heard good things about that.
Alex really liked it. So, and for, I think it's like $8 or something, it ends up being, apparently $5. I think it ends up being like a 12-hour game, so.
That's not bad. Well, any puzzle game is going to be longer or shorter, depending on how good you are at puzzles and which intuitive leaps you make.
That is true. Layden Brothers is more kind of like click on the everything.
Rather
than actually solving puzzles. Like, there is a little bit of kind of Phoenix Wright-esque find logical contradictions.
Yeah, I've heard that it's very Phoenix Wright-inspired, and you definitely play a lawyer and a cop.
Actually, you play two cops. So, one of the cops is watching the other cop to see how good a lawyer she would make.
Of course.
Because he already figured everything out and is now just waiting for everyone else to catch up to him. So, also, he's schizophrenic.
Anything else?
Lots of FTL. Lots of the Attack on Titan tribute game. It's a lot of fun. I've gotten to the point where I can do what's colloquially known as a sparrow strike. I wrote a quick tutorial on how to do what I've coined a parabolic strike, which apparently no one's ever, like, given a name to before, so.
Cool.
That's neat. Yeah, I can't remember my own
technique.
Parabolas
are awesome. You should have called it the Parabola of Terror. No, it's Parabola of Mystery. That's the joke.
What?
It's the red versus blue. Okay, start Operation Triangle of Terror. It's not really a triangle, man. It doesn't matter. Rhombus of Terror. Parabola of Mystery. Let's start the plan.
Yes, I should have called it the Parabola of Mystery, but sadly my red versus blue knowledge was lacking. I am now more edified than I was before. So, that and, like I said, a lot of FTL. I'm two victories away from unlocking the Crystal Cruiser because I gave up on trying to do the goddamn Ancestry quest, because goddammit.
What have you been playing, Zach?
Well, after grinding for a while, I managed to beat FTL, not once, but twice in the last week, so.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yay.
There's a CEO of Cake involved.
I did once on the Stealth Cruiser with everybody around, because I was just hanging out with everybody, and it's like, yay, I finally beat it, and sat through the credits, and then I beat it again later, in the same weekend, which was weird, because I'd never done, well, considering how much I'd played it and hadn't beaten it to that point, and then having two in a row, well, not two in a row, but basically two right on the heels of each other.
Fair enough.
Twice in 2 days.
I find that I'm not really sure what counts as being good at FTL, but I find I have gotten good enough at it that I never don't make it to the boss anymore, so.
I've had a few where I haven't made it to the boss, but that's usually because something happens and I'm like, yeah, this is just going to be a waste of the next 40 minutes anyway, as I try and avoid any kind of conflict because I can't win basically.
And because you avoid
right
conflict,
now.
You can't get any more scrap and.
Yeah, it's a
negative feedback loop.
Yeah, thank you. So you just basically just, all right. Restart, because this isn't going to work.
May I just point out that negative feedback loops are, like, the worst thing in video games?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
I've been trying to work with the Mantis Cruiser, but that one's a little trickier. Because it doesn't have a sensor suite for some reason, which seems necessary for a boarding party.
Yeah, you just teleport in wherever the hell and kill whatever happens to show up.
Yeah, it just feels like you should really have a teleporter, or not a teleporter, a sensor suite so you know. Don't teleport into the five or the full four-man crew.
Well, and I think that's all the specialized ships. Basically, once you get past the Kestrel and the Federation cruiser is also not super specialized, although it's pretty good. But all the specialized ships all have, like, a weakness that you have to, like, get enough scrap to overcome at some point in the game.
Yeah, the Mantis cruiser has a weak system in its guns. The Zoltan cruiser that I beat the game on.
No
the second
shields.
Time, it has 1 point of shields.
Oh, does it?
That's it has 1 point of shield power, but since you don't get a shield until 2, you have to get 100 scrap, which is less than you need to get the Stealth Cruiser shield, but you need to get that before you can start upgrading it and utilizing actual shields. But that has a little bit of the bonus because it has the
overshield.
Overshield.
Yeah, the Mantis Cruiser, I think that one they expect you to either buy sensors or get a slug, because slugs can sense where people are. So.
Yeah, but I need to be able to get to a place where I can buy a sensor with enough money to buy a sensor.
And have it, you know, be sold there, and there are a lot of things that can have to line up in your favor, so. Mm-hmm. Oh man, this last run I did, I had to pass up both a Glaive and a Vulcan, because I didn't have enough money.
The weirdest part about my victory on the Zoltan ship was, I had one gun that dealt damage. The starting beam that it comes with, like the pike beam, which can do a lot of damage to, it can do one damage to a lot of rooms, but it doesn't deal a lot of damage.
Is that the one that you end up getting, like, two ion cannons on?
Yeah, it starts with two ion cannons and then the pike beam. When I beat it, I had exchanged one ion cannon for an ion charger, and I had an ion cannon and found a firebomb. And on the on the third form of the boss, I had a firebomb. I had one bomb, one chance.
And your pilot was named Billy, and you were like, guess who started the fire?
And I managed to land it in the missile quarter. So I was able to take that out and eventually whittle the boss down with my ion cannons slowly pecking the shields away so the pike beam could do damage.
Before you move on, I want to tell my FTL story.
Sweet.
I played one game of FTL this week and won with the Kestrel, awesome. Though, which was I hadn't won with yet, but it's pretty easy. I never bought any weapons because there were never any good ones, but a breach bomb and three triple lasers fell into my lap, and I was looking for a beam or something to like
take
actually
advantage
do damage.
Of those shields.
But I never found it and got to the boss. I found just having like a suite of drones for the boss prepared for each form is really the key to winning that game.
If you can have enough spots for different varieties of equipment, it really helps. But
like, I had a defense drone Mark II that shot down every attack the boss's first form shot at me. He never shot
useful.
Down the shields.
Oh, really?
Never
wow.
hit the shields, I should say.
Well, lasers go
I got
through
lucky.
Drones, don't they?
The defense Mark II can stop lasers.
Although it can only, in a volley of three, it can only hit two of them. So I'm surprised you never took much missile damage. So
yeah, it was lucky. I also prioritized attacking the missile launcher, though.
That is the first thing I do.
And that is the key to winning the game.
As I recall,
attack
when
the
you were
missile
telling
launcher.
Me about this earlier, you also got lucky enough to pick up what is probably the best ship upgrade in the game.
Oh, yeah, I also got the weapon pre-igniter.
Oh, yeah, well, that's actually how I won on the Kestrel this weekend. I had the weapons pre-igniter and a Flak II and a
I don't like
Halberd
the Flak
beam.
Guns very much.
They're great for beam weapons because it takes down the shields long enough to rake the beam across.
My problem is they never actually hit with the...
They're also super inaccurate. They're not good for doing damage. They're good for taking out
but
shields.
The first time I beat it, I had the weapon pre-igniter as well, so...
It's pretty good.
It's like the best...
It's just ridiculously expensive.
What else have you been playing, Zach?
I have been playing still some more Fallout 3, off and on. Not too much. I'm still getting out and starting to really explore the wasteland. I got to Megaton. I disarmed the bomb because I'm not an entirely.
Not that you're not that kind of.
Not that level of. A lot of League, and I just started Fire Emblem again. I've had an up and down week. I had some good days. I had some bad games. Yesterday was horrible. I don't think I won a game yesterday that wasn't against bots, so they don't count. Since they don't count. Tuesday, I was playing a game, and I had a derpy support. Who had issues with hooks,
but had
great, great lanterns getting me out of trouble, but getting us into weird trouble.
I was not
elsewise.
That derpy.
I really wanted to actually be derpy.
No.
That would be fantastic.
I would play derpy if they brought derpy out.
Yeah. I'm actually giving Jeremy a lot of crap. We had some problematic
teammates.
Fights. Teammates and fights. We lost a major fight near one of the main objectives because their tank line jumped me, who did our damage, and killed me. So we had no damage, and since we didn't really have a tank line to stop them from doing this, it's really hard to play the guy I was playing.
By a tank line, do you just mean a guy playing a tank character?
Or two. Two tanks has been common for some time now. One tank is becoming more common right now, because damage is more powerful than tanking right now.
But, like, their guy could jump through our line, and because of communication problems, not having, you know, voice chat and being solo queue.
Super
despite
helps.
The fact that I will follow that support, or Jeremy as my support, into basically whatever fight he gets into, because I trust him to get into a decent fight.
You can start a brawl!
Well, I also think supports should be the fight starters anyway, but that's entirely different.
I'm clearly misunderstanding how supports work in this game.
It's more that supports right now are usually picked because they have crowd control. And so if you land a good crowd control, that's a good way to start a fight.
That was how we ended up winning. We got two of their team without the rest of their team and erased them pretty much instantly. Like, I don't think their support even understood what had happened.
Yeah, we got Raccoon on our side, and he was like, erase a gun!
And then he just disappeared randomly.
Yeah,
after being...
pretty much. I think he had his ult, so I think he came back. Then we killed him again.
The Raccoon Ultra Fighting Bomber.
But yeah, bad games yesterday, good games on Tuesday, pretty good games on every other day I've played, but...
Anything else, or should I tell my League stories?
Last time on video games, the League cast.
This time I am trying to do Fire Emblem the way, you know, it's kind of meant to be played on Classic. Yeah. So I'm giving myself one restart per level, so if somebody dies, I can restart once.
So almost hardcore mode.
Yeah,
like hardcore
I realized I would not just, you know, go with it if I didn't try something first. So I'm going to kind of ease my way into doing hardcore mode next time I play the game. It's not on, like, the hardest difficulty or any of that, because that's kind
of... Doesn't that Fire Emblem actually have a hardcore mode you can turn on? Or does it not?
No, it's got three...
I know it has extra softcore mode.
Yeah.
With double bras.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got the casual class, or the casual classic are the sliders. Casual is where if somebody dies, they're away for that mission, but they come back. Classic is somebody dies...
They're dead.
Too bad, they're dead. They're gone.
That's how I played my Fire Emblems back when I emulated them when I was old enough.
Okay, if you're playing Fire Emblem, you know how everybody plays Fire Emblem. Crap, somebody died. Off on.
No, I actually just went through. I played through the entire game and everyone who died, died. Which is sad because I had an awesome relationship between a mage and an archer at one point.
Were they married?
No, well, they were getting there. But then the mage died. It let him get raped by an axe guy.
I still really enjoy the game. It's a lot of fun. I would recommend it to anybody who has a 3DS. I have my special 3DS, which is awesome.
It's got dragons and swords.
I've been playing, like I said, that one game of FTL. A lot of the assignment. The Wii U actually has a cool feature where in addition to telling you how much of a game you've played per day, you can also go to, like, per month and per week. And so I found out I played A Link to the Past for 17 hours and 1 minute.
I forgot that.
That 1 minute was very important.
It was.
He got, like, a bomb upgrade or something in that 1 minute.
Anyway, so I've been playing lots of that, and then League. I actually, on Sunday night, ended up with a four-man pre-made in League, and they're like, can you play top, bro? I'm like, hells yeah, I can play top. Take teleport, bro. Ward for me, bro. You know it. Get on Skype with us, bro. I was like, okay. So I top-laned with some people on Skype for three games.
That's pretty sweet.
Huh, that's really cool.
It was.
I'm confused as to all the people complaining about premades. All of, like, the four-man premades I've played with have actually been really cool people.
Yeah, and they were like, I like this top. You should come play with us more. I'm like, okay, I was up against a Malphite who didn't do anything, so it was pretty easy, but...
Who are you playing?
Shyvana. I played Shyvana two games and Renekton, the one we lost.
Both very good champions.
Yeah. And then Tuesday I played League all day and only won two games, one with Zach, and one because two of my enemies disconnected. So that
it's
was
an
not
opening.
A good day.
Oh, does Naruto Attack of the Subtitles have an online mode? Because it should.
I think the Steam one does, but I don't think the 360 one does.
It
might be that you would need gold to use it, and I didn't, so...
You do need gold to play anything multiplayer on there. I think it does. I didn't check while I had it, but I think it actually does.
I was just thinking, if that game happens to go on sale during the Steam Summer Sale, I'm going to buy, like, 8 copies of that and just kind of disperse them. Probably not 8, but potentially more than one.
Okay.
Anyway.
Speaking of potentially more than one, our assignment this week.
There are
Zelda 3.
Pieces of the Triforce.
There are.
That's my contribution. I'm done.
What's it called in Japan? Oh, yeah. The Legend of Zelda Triforce of the Gods.
Oh, yeah. And they wouldn't let them call it that because Nintendo was like,
God! So they changed it to A Link to the Past.
You remember G Gundam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, how they changed it from Devil and God to Dark and...
Burning!
Although Burning is pretty good.
The other part is, remember the little... Like figures he has at one point, it still says God on the base of the figure.
Oh, yep.
It's the Swedish Gundam.
Yeah,
I don't know, Sailor Moon Gundam.
No, it's a crime that it's not the Sailor Moon Gundam.
I was gonna call it the Meatball Head Gundam, but
bit of trivia I found out for DC Comics this week: the Martian Manhunter is a thing where he's like Superman for everywhere that's not America, and so he has secret identities everywhere. His one in Japan is Ray Harno, who is Sailor Mars on Sailor Moon, which is amazing.
Oh. God.
I knew her first name, but I didn't know her last name. Now I know. I'm probably going to forget that, though, so.
Oh, well. The new Sailor Moon anime starts in, like, 3 weeks.
Oh, I thought it already started.
No, they put everything on Hulu. All the old stuff. And it's getting a new dub that's not...
Okay, that
not
must
all of
be
it's
it.
On Hulu yet.
Okay.
So there was, like, 9 or 10 episodes at this point.
Ryan was here this weekend, and he was talking about how Fielder was watching all of Sailor Moon, and I thought he meant the new one.
Yeah, I've been considering jumping on Hulu and doing it, but I've been watching Georangia instead. So anyway, Link to the Past. Let's start at the beginning, because it's, like, a big improvement, I think, off The Legend of Zelda.
Before we start at the beginning, a bit of trivia about this is, in the original concept design of this phase, you were actually supposed to have time travel involved, where you went back to a futuristic city in the past, which they kind of brought back in Skyward Sword.
Yeah, kind of.
But
and Ocarina of Time.
Well, I mean, not just the time travel, but the futuristic city in the past.
Skyward Sword is full on after the apocalypse.
But clearly they dropped that in this, but...
I feel as though there was another recent game they made that involved time traveling back to an ancient
utopia. That's a super common theme. I'm just talking about Zelda
especially games, out of Japan. Japan has a thing like ancient civilizations rocked.
Does Shin 10-4 have that?
Okami has it.
Not as such, because, you know, of how they had the
Paradox machine.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, the place you're from is actually floating above Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, it's Shin 10.
And then at one point you go to the past or the future or an alternate reality or something and basically help found your kingdom on, like, this blasted nuclear apocalypse landscape.
Yeah.
So it's not quite the same thing, but it's just weird how they did that.
What are you talking about? Shin 10's always had normal plots. Like, the first one, you're just the ghost of a guy reincarnating the main character's best friend and then becoming the main character and then also going to Neo.
Well, part of that is normal.
That was the joke.
Yeah.
I'm aware that was the joke.
So don't explain the joke, because...
No, he just derailed my joke train.
Go in. No, I can't do anything with that. Link to the Past. It starts out, you have like a dream sequence that's mostly done in text.
And it's like, hey, help me, bro. And Link's like, but I'm sleeping. And Link's uncle is like, no, man, it's cool, I got this. And then leaves the house and tells you to stay there.
Which you don't, because it's a video game.
Except for one guy on Amazon bought it and gave it a 1-star review because he just stayed in the house the entire time.
That was a joke, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm almost entirely sure.
My uncle told me to stay in the house, so I did, and then nothing happened.
Yeah. I broke some pots. He's probably going to be angry about that when he gets back. But
so then you go, your uncle got defeated in the sewers.
By a rat, I guess, because there's nothing else down there. So
you
he trips and fell. Well, you do have to jump down a bush hole to get there. So maybe he like broke his ankle on the way down. Fatally broke it and then fell on his sword.
Well, he does come back at the end of the game, spoiler, but you also get a wish on the Triforce, and it's not really clear what you wish for. But some characters that were definitely dead come back.
So maybe he just wished for, I wish this whole Ganon thing didn't happen?
Quite possible. Although, also characters that die that have nothing to do with that. So, hard to say. Anyway, you get your uncle's sword and shield and call to adventure.
And also learn the ancient technique of your people, spinning in a circle.
It's a pretty good technique. Sonic would be proud.
And therefore combat has been mastered.
And battle can be joined. So I actually like the beginning where you save Zelda right away. Of course it doesn't take, but it does kind of make her more of a character that you get to interact with her early on.
And you totally lead her to, like, a Catholic cathedral. And the priest there is like, yo, bro, you gotta go get some pendants. Go talk to the elder of Kakariko Village.
Yeah, I thought he just sent you to the elder, and the elder is like, you need some pendants.
Whose name is, like, Sahasrara or something, who you can talk to through triangle stones.
So that's kind of where the story ends. There is more, but it's
pretty minimal.
Yeah, it's pretty, go to dungeon, get some plot. Go to dungeon, get some plot.
And then you get all the MacGuffins, and then you're like, oh man, I need more MacGuffins, and then you have to go get more MacGuffins.
Actually, you rescue people at that point.
Well, who are the MacGuffins?
Well, they're people MacGuffins. PaGuffins, if you will. Guffin Americans.
I would watch that show.
But it's a big improvement off the last couple of games, and it's actually, I think, real ambitious for a Super Nintendo game.
It's got a lot going on. It's pretty.
I really like the implicit story. It has a nice feel. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's not like some of the later Zelda games were like, Jesus Christ, I just want my sword so I can go and kill some things. I don't care about this love interest or this mayor.
Or this mayor?
Does it look the same on the SNES as it does on the Game Boy?
Pretty much. The graphics are.
Okay.
Or, oh man, in Skyward Sword Girahim, every time that guy showed up, my god.
Oh yeah, well, I actually don't mind Girahim that much, but I really like the balance of story to gameplay that they strike. Although... this is sort of jumping the gun, but once you start saving the people Guffins, they will give you a little backstory on what's going on. And all of them but Zelda just have shown up and are uninteresting.
Well, that's because they're the maidens who were abducted before you were even there. So.
And they always end with, do you understand? But that's not really, like, it's a poor translation because almost never are they trying to impart information. They're almost always just saying, here's some lore about the world. Would you like to hear that again?
Do you understand?
Put?
What am I supposed to understand? You're explaining history. You're not asking me a freaking riddle.
There's a lot of that.
There's a point at which your options are yes and of course. So,
but future games like Ocarina of Time establishes all the maidens when you're young, and so they come off much better as characters. And A Link Between Worlds, which uses the same overmap and plot, the entire, like, when you're finding the first three pendants is establishing the maidens you're going to rescue, which really works. In particular, the fast travel in A Link Between Worlds, there's like this witch on a broomstick who's like, this fortune teller told me to look out for people wearing green. So if you need anything, call me on this bell and I'll fly you where you want to go on this, on my broom. And then she just like has witty remarks every time. Like, I know you work out, you're like running around, but could you lose some weight? And like, I'm starting to feel like you're abusing this relationship a little bit. But then after you find the third pendant, but before you get the Master Sword, if you call her, her broom shows up and she's not on it. And it's just a dot, dot, dot. And so it's a much better motivation to try and rescue these people than in this game where it's like, there's some maidens to rescue, bro.
Because
Zelda's one of them, but she's totally last. So
actually, they're all gone.
Well, yeah, it does establish them, but they don't have any distinguishing features from one another.
No,
is more what I meant.
In the opening cutscene, it says there's only one of these maidens left.
Yeah, I know. It's not like they come out like, what are with these maidens, but my point is they could have established them. And
like, you have no investment in their characters because they're not even characters. They're basically books.
No, according to the opening cutscene, they're all already dead.
No, they've been kidnapped.
Yeah.
By Argahim or whatever the guy's name is, the mage dude at the beginning.
Yeah. They're descended from like some sages who are dead. I don't think it says the maidens are dead. Maybe you're right, but I feel like
I'm almost positive it says the only one left is Zelda, and she's already in prison.
Yeah, no, it says Aghanim is going around kidnapping them and doing who knows what.
Yeah, because, there's even one of the signs you read is, like, the king has posted a bounty to information leading to finding the maidens. I'm pretty sure they're not dead.
And then later they post a bounty on you, and if you go to Kakariko and speak to the wrong old ladies, she calls for the cops.
Which I actually kind of find is a nice touch. But anyway, I really like the setup for the game. It feels like an adventure you're going on. The world is big for the time, but pretty small by modern standards.
You can easily walk around it once you get the Pegasus boots, which are passed down by the sages. I'm not sure why old guys are like, hey man, you want these boots that let you run really fast?
If you stick out your sword, you can totally skewer some guys as you go by. They're really useful for mowing your lawn.
Thanks, real calling. A lawn care maintenance.
All he needs is like a hyper shovel or something, then he can aerate it while he's cutting it.
You don't use a shovel to aerate your lawn.
Well, yeah, but this is Zelda. What are they going to give him, a super
aerator?
No,
what
aerator?
He needs to do is he goes through with the sword held high, cuts all the grass, and then he goes back through, turns the sword on its head, and then cuts a big furrow on the ground. Aerated.
Oh, man. Link could totally be a farmer. It's perfect.
Tyler's wife has suggested Pegasus cleats.
They'd have to have some long and big spikes on them.
Yeah. Based on the number of bombs he's carrying alone, ignoring all of his other equipment, Link's generally carrying, 500 pounds of equipment, so I'm pretty sure if he just dropped all that, he could probably run in Pegasus cleats.
Link is a bomb waiting to happen.
He's carrying
a natural disaster.
He's carrying a lamp, a magic fire wand, and 10 bombs at many points during this game.
I don't know. Seems safe.
All right, guys. He's going to go save the princess. That can't possibly have been because Link was walking around with an armory in his back pocket.
Did you guys ever see that comic where Impa's like, Princess Zelda, I have some bad news. Link has failed in his quest. And he's like, oh no, I hope he died a heroic death. And Impa's like, yeah. And then it shows like Link's corpse covered in chickens.
I've seen that.
So anyway, one thing that surprised me about this game was how, I don't know if difficult is the right word, but important the combat is. Because in later Zelda games, the combat is just sort of there because you're on a fantasy adventure. With the exception of the bosses, you just sort of swing your sword and it's to break up the puzzles. In this game, the combat is a real threat, and if you're not paying attention, you will die.
Which is sad, because I don't find the combat terribly engaging. I feel like you have this big plane to move around, but enemies are hard to hit. If that makes it, I feel like your sword arc isn't long enough, almost.
It's downright boring is what it is.
It's also that obnoxious. Some of the enemies are just tedious. Like, especially when you get to the Dark World, there are those ogres that have bombs, and they don't take a recoil.
The first enemy I fought against, I was like, yep, this is annoying.
I don't know. I actually kind of like the combat. One of the things that having enemies take a lot of hits does is it really makes your sword upgrades feel cool. When suddenly the ogres die in only 2 hits, you feel awesome.
Well, and once you get a bunch of items, I'm notorious for hoarding all my resources and therefore not using them. But like the ice wand, you can freeze dudes and then break them apart with a hammer, which is cool.
I got tired of taking damage, so I started hitting knights in the face with a boomerang and then hitting them twice.
Which is why they gave you the boomerang.
Which was rote and not fun.
Yeah, well, it gets
annoying. I find it fun, but that's your opinion. I feel like the more the game goes on and the more weapons you get, the better it gets, because you have, like, the mummies that die to the fire wand in one hit and things that you can hammer. But I feel like even early on, though, they give you the boomerang, and that's really helpful against the knights.
I actually found that I just ended up avoiding combat with them because they run slower than you, so you can just walk around them.
That is the correct option. There is no advantage to getting into a fight.
You can get rupees, but those are so plentiful, especially early on in the game.
I can get rupees really by mowing somebody's lawn.
That's true, I suppose. But, you know, the enemies are usually on the way to places you're going, and sometimes lawns are too.
That's actually, I found most of the time I was going around maps, I would just hold the run with the Pegasus Boots button and just zoom through the screen.
Yeah, so. The Pegasus Boots do sort of, they're not a fast travel exactly, because you get a flute later that is just, you know, teleport to these locations fast travel. But they sort of are a buffer in between where you can get through the straightaways you've already been through very quickly by just holding the Pegasus Boost button and running through. And since your sword's in front of you, you rarely take damage doing that.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed. Cause it's like, hey, go from this dungeon all the way across the map to the other one. It's like, really?
Yeah, so few video games have a location you have to be, and then another location you have to go to at another place.
To be fair, there are, well, actually they're not on opposite sides of the map.
Yes, they are.
No, they aren't. The first one you get is on the far east, and the second one you get is in the south. Totally not opposite.
The southwest.
It's like dead center.
Also, there's the map like marshy isn't plains. That big, I don't think.
Yeah, that was going to be my counter to that, is I feel like you can traverse the entire map in like 5 minutes.
Yes, I can also traverse the full map of Saints Row in 5 minutes, and it's a lot more interesting. And bigger.
Fair point, I guess. I actually really like the world map. It's just distinct enough. You have the castle in the center, you have the mountains up top, you have the lake, the desert, the sort of like swampy area between the desert and the lake, and then
there must be some really wet
plains
in between.
Yeah, and they are all distinct enough that they're different.
And they only take up like 2 or 3 screens apiece, so.
Yeah.
Which at the very least is better than most modern games that I prefer to play, because Fallout is a barren wasteland.
A giant desert. Although that's
Saints
kind of
Row
its
is a city.
At least with Fallout, that's kind of its thing. I would actually really like a biome-themed, like, sandbox game, though. Maybe not biome-themed, but a sandbox game with biomes.
Minecraft has that.
It does, but actually I really have no complaints to lodge. Minecraft doesn't fill my biome needs.
So that's the basic gameplay. You go to dungeons, you solve puzzles there, you fight a boss, and then you traverse the overworld map to get to the next dungeon.
You collect a crap ton of rupees, which you can eventually spend to upgrade your bomb and arrow carrying capacity.
Yeah, the rupee progression I found odd in this game. I had 999 fairly early,
yep.
And then for about half of the game had that, and then I just didn't have any rupees.
Yep, that's pretty much how it goes.
Which, I mean, I guess makes them useful later on, but
the fact
it kind of sucks.
There's nothing to spend it on in between.
Yeah, the fact that there's not enough to spend it on early is a little problematic. I guess you can buy arrows and bombs, but they're so plentiful
like
just out in the world.
Like, enemies drop them anyway. My biggest problem was actually that I probably should have been carrying more health potions, because I think I got to the entrance of the second dungeon, the second Dark World dungeon, including doing some side quests, and I died, I think, probably 5 times just up to that point, so.
Sounds like as much time as I died in the first one.
Like I said earlier, the combat is a little harder than I expected, but that makes things like the weapon upgrades and the potions really useful, and it is something you can spend your rupees on, so maybe that was the whole idea.
Well, there's not really a big penalty for dying, and my problem isn't that the combat's too difficult, is that it's
pointless.
Well, there is kind of that. It's more that it's deceptively difficult. Like, I feel like it's easier than it is, and therefore I take damage because I'm careless more than because it's actually hard.
I take damage because I find it annoying and hard. But there's no reward for combat. That's, I think, my biggest problem. It's obnoxiously difficult for no reason.
Well, it's because you're in a dungeon, and dungeons have enemies, right?
And there are some times where there's the reward of progress. There are a few rooms where you have to kill an enemy to get a key. Or to open a door.
And I do like the bosses, because at least they're, like, a lot of them have a thing to figure out in standard Zelda style.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the bosses. Zach, you only faced the first boss, right? Who's, like, 6 armored dudes that...
Oh, yeah, that one's actually really bland compared to all the other ones.
Yeah, I only beat that one. Well, it took me forever to get to him, so I wouldn't know.
The second boss is, like, these worms that also just you attack with your sword.
At least you have to attack them at specific times.
That's true. Right when they... trying to jump out of the ground. The third boss I actually found to be interesting.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
The second boss is Whack-A-Mole?
Kind of.
Yeah, essentially. You're right. The second dungeon is definitely in the southwest. I was wrong.
The third boss can't really hurt you. He can, but only, like, 1 heart at a time. But he sends you flying, and there are pits at the edge of his thing.
Oh, that thing. I hate that thing.
And you can fall off to reset the fight.
He's basically a giant chain chomp, and you have to hit his tail. He's not hard, except he moves randomly, and the more damage he takes, the faster he gets. And it's kind of a small arena that you have to fight him on.
So it's basically just trying to make the difficulty not, oh no, I'm going to die, but I have to be careful because I don't want to fall and lose my progress. Which isn't great, but it is the first, I think, interesting thing they've tried. That's not just hit boss with sword.
And then they introduce Agon. I can't remember this guy. He's in, like, goddamn every Zelda game.
I feel like he's only in this one. There are similar characters.
He's in a lot of the mobile ones.
Although he is a boss trope that's familiar to Zelda. He shoots a fireball at you. You have to hit the fireball with your sword to redirect it at him.
Sometimes he has a tell that indicates he's going to shoot laser lightning, because apparently he's Palpatine. He does have the cloak. So
you have to beat him with baseball.
Yeah.
I was going to go with ping pong, but...
That's... Somebody with a ping pong ball and see how much they care.
That's Zelda boss. Well, it's a magic ping pong ball. Have you ever hit someone with a magic ping pong ball?
Yeah, they didn't care.
Oh, where did you get a magic ping pong ball? I've looked everywhere for those.
From Amazon... George Lopez.
Amazon was sold out.
You don't get them at Amazon. You got to go down to Garth's.
My one weakness, sports utility stores.
Yeah, that's Sports Authority now, I guess. I keep calling the place Garth's.
I can't really think of any of the other novel boss mechanics, though, until the end.
The one where you get the hammer, you have to knock his face shield off with the hammer.
Yeah,
it's not really novel, but...
No. The last one has a fire head and an ice head, and you have to hit him with the opposite wand.
So you have to hit the fire head with the ice wand and the ice... head with the fire wand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fire wand you get based off of like a random cue of some guy in a cave is like, hey, you should go look at this cave on slightly to my right because there's cool stuff in there. The fire wand I feel like is the treasure of a dungeon. I think it might be that dungeon.
Yeah. The ice wand you mean is the one that's off in a random cave.
Yeah. Did I say fire wand at first? Okay,
the fire wand you get just through playing the game.
I'm still on the side of it sounds like this game has a lot of guide dang it stuff.
Not
no, but, like, the guy told you, while you were in the car playing, got the guy who told you, hey, you're going to need this thing over here. Like, that's the thing he was referring to is the ice wand.
Well, I feel like the overworld map is small enough that it's easy to find everything. Like, pretty much everything that there is to go do, you can go do immediately when you see it, or it's, like, obvious enough that you just had to remember it.
I feel it's less guy dang it and more they wanted sort of side quests that would matter later. So they put some stuff with, like, obvious hooks, like, in Skyrim, it would be... I shouldn't say in Skyrim. In WoW, it would be a guy with an exclamation point on their head, and you can ignore them or not. But then at the end of the game, it actually becomes important that you go talk to those guys.
And not all of it is that way. Like, the cape of I'm not taking any damage is useless, but neat.
Well, I mean, it's not useless. It makes you immune to damage.
Okay,
but
maybe
you
not...
don't need it to beat the game.
I meant to say unnecessary rather than useless, but...
And those are two totally different things.
Yeah.
They are, yes.
And actually, the final boss I thought was pretty cool. After you go through Ganon's Tower, the pyramid you show up on in the Dark World the first time cracks open, and you jump in to fight him.
Is he the teleporty version?
Yeah, he's sort of teleports.
With fire bats?
Yeah, yeah, that
okay.
One. And, but at the very end, he's got a trick. He starts collapsing the ground around him, so the fighting arena gets smaller, and you have to light these two torches to him.
And you can only do damage when he's lit.
Yeah.
Which is pretty neat. It's not a terribly difficult fight compared to... I feel the two-headed dragon turtle thing was... a lot harder.
I actually don't find that one to be too hard, but there are definitely harder fights than Ganon in the game, yeah.
It does definitely feel very climatic, though. He's the one who affects the environment you're fighting in the most, so.
And they didn't really do the Zelda thing. We talked about the exception of the fire ice head guy, but later Zeldas are very much, hey, you got the hookshot. This boss is designed around using the hookshot to get around to get to where he can be hurt. Or, hey, the boomerang is here. This is a battle where you need to boomerang some bombs to you to throw at the...
Yeah, this
guy.
Game doesn't really do that. The first boss in the Dark World, you need the hammer to beat, but you can also use bombs or really anything else with concussive force. So, I don't know, it's weird to not have that trope, especially given how... Although this game is really not like other Zelda games, and I kind of like it for that.
There are other Zelda games like it, I feel.
Yeah, that is true.
But it is not like the later ones, the Ocarina of Time and the ones I really, really like. But I can see all the seeds here.
And then there's Majora's Mask.
So actually, two games I kind of want to compare Link to the Past to before we're done.
The Legend of Zelda?
Let's start with Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2. Like, Zach, can you at least agree this is a marked improvement over those?
What little work they did, yeah.
What? I don't even...
Justify that statement.
Well, it's primarily because, to me, Zelda 1 and this game feel extremely similar. They're both obnoxious combat. They're both top down, and they're both... I spent so much time respawning and trying to walk back to where I was that they just felt so similar that it didn't feel like they did a whole heck of a lot with the gameplay front of things. But maybe it's because I didn't get anywhere, which is the argument people are going to use against me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like there are at least four times as many items as in the first Zelda game, which gives you a lot of different things you can be doing, which in turn lets them give you different challenges to try to face.
And the map is much better designed.
Well, that's true, too.
It's not a horrible labyrinthine abyss.
And you can actually look at the map screen and see where you're going and where you are.
Oh, yeah, I forgot not the the dungeon maps are still not great.
Yeah, that is definitely the dungeon maps.
Huh, I didn't really feel they were that bad, but...
They're pretty bad.
I never had to use them, really, but they're not much better.
To me, they're mostly, have I been to this room before? Oh, it's green, blue, so I guess I have.
Well, yeah, that doesn't excuse them being bad. That's just...
I just don't feel they're bad. I guess I'm outnumbered here. But I feel like they were useful in getting to where I wanted to go.
It is better than Zelda 2.
Oh, it's so much better than Zelda 2.
I actually like Zelda 2 better than the first one, but...
I can see that argument, but, like, Zelda 2 isn't a bad game, it's just too hard. I can see a person's like, I want to beat this game, I want to get invested and get good at it, and I can see someone having fun with that, but...
For me, Zelda 2 is like a 1, and Zelda's like a 2. So it's not like we're talking a large jump in
And where would you put Link to the Past?
That's twice the score, though.
4.
Huh? Well, that's another double. So if Ocarina of Time can get to 8, we're at a good game.
Ocarina's the only one I've enjoyed so far.
Yeah. I can't really say Twilight Princess because I only played that for like an hour.
Oh, we're close to Ocarina, too. Just one game in between this and that.
What is that?
Link's Awakening.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I really feel like they took Zelda 1, they said, okay, what works? Okay, Zach complained about not knowing where to go ever, so we're going to put markers on the map to tell him where to go. And I think that's just a really good thing, because you're never really like, oh, where do I have to go? Because even if it's across the map, there's a flashing pendant there. Towards the end of the game, when you start needing some of the side stuff, that can be kind of a problem, because those aren't glowing and highlighted.
They should have glowing and highlighted the way into the castle in the first place.
Yeah, but there's only so much place. I agree there's probably too much place you can go before you can get into the spot you need to get to, but there are only so many places you can explore without the sword, because a lot of places are blocked by grass. But you can get to a too large chunk of map without it. It doesn't do a very good job.
It wasn't even that. I was running around the outside of the keep trying to figure it out, and Zelda was like, hey, there's a place you can get into the castle here. I was looking for a door, not a hole.
I mean, presumably the doors would be guarded, though. The other game I want to compare this to, and this is mostly for me, is Skyrim.
I don't even... Okay.
This game is worse in every way.
Thanks. Let's have a discussion about this.
Okay. I disagree with that, partially because Zelda changes the way you can interact with the environment. Skyrim, you just get better at interacting with the environment in ways you already could.
Like, the shouts sort of let you interact with the environment differently, right? Become ethereal.
Yeah, but the physics I never really are kind of wonky. Them.
The shouts don't really affect the environment in ways that I would want to. Like, I want to be able to level mountains or fly. You can't do that in Skyrim.
Did you ever accidentally use the Fusro Da shout and knock something you need off of a pedestal?
I definitely have, yes.
You have to reload because you didn't actually take it off the pedestal. You knocked it off the pedestal, but it didn't open the gate.
But I would argue that Zelda is better in the variety of actions you can perform.
What I sort of came to is they're very different sorts of games that are trying to give you the same feel, right? They're both trying to give you the feel of a fantasy adventure where you're playing a hero.
And guy with sword, or maybe axe or hammer, or magics.
Although you can bow, all three. Or sneaks.
I did play Sneaky McThief Pants.
You always play Sneaky McThief Pants.
I have a lot of fun playing Sneaky McThief Pants. Although, occasionally I have a lot of fun playing Caster McPunch Mage. So.
And another way I think the games are similar is people call both RPGs, and I think both incorrectly.
Way back when I have seen Link to the Past labeled an RPG, I would not call it that.
No, neither would I. And I don't think Skyrim is an RPG either, really. It's got stats and sort of classes.
So what would you call them?
Simulation.
I wrote a...
It's a simulation of this world. They gave AIs to all these characters, these dragons and these shopkeepers, and they've given it a very important physics engine that doesn't always work, unfortunately. But that is a big part of the game.
Flying dragon in reverse.
But I wrote a last rant on this forever ago, and I can't come up with a better thing to call it, but I would actually call them action-adventure more than RPG.
Well, yeah, and I sort of agree with that, but the problem is naming things. And that's, I think, what my problem with Skyrim is ultimately. When you say RPG, there are certain things I expect. And in the same way that Link to the Past doesn't really deliver them, Skyrim doesn't really either.
Well, like, Skyrim, I've always played a Vagrant.
Yeah,
in Obsidian games, I've always kind of played a Vagrant.
Well, I wander around the countryside, killing goblins and wolves and taking their stuff and then going back to town and hawking it and then resuming. And
you know, at some point, I did that. I usually do that in almost every Bethesda game I play. At some point, I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm only making 12 gold per run. Why am I doing this?
So I was making massive profit because I was not going into town or into dungeons with armor.
Oh, so you'd always come
I had
out.
Just normal clothes, and I would use whatever I found in the dungeon for my armor.
My problem was I could never find enough people to sell it to. Everyone kept running out of money.
Skyrim does that.
Yeah. Oblivion does not.
Oblivion does not. We had that debate on mic at one point.
And
you were wrong.
Another way I yep. sort of think they're similar is that they both have a main quest, right? But both of them, I think, don't really care if you do that. I think Zelda cares a little more because it unlocks things a little slower.
Well, you can't really finish Skyrim. You don't finish Zelda until you complete the main quest.
That's true. And that Skyrim has a lot more going on because it's a game that came out in 2012.
You finish Skyrim when you have decided you're done with Skyrim.
Which I did after 130 hours on the same character.
It didn't take me that long. My problem was I stopped playing Skyrim when I was like, yes, there's another dragon over there. And
God damn it, how many of these have I killed?
Just killed it. It stopped being the epic duel to the death between the hero and the big enemy of the game, which is what happened the first time I fought a dragon.
I never did get good enough at smithing to make dragon armor.
The very first time I fought a dragon, it was like an epic knockdown, drag-out battle. It had the feeling of the epic fight.
Not
I ran
so
like
much
a scared rabbit and hid behind rocks, but...
Well, it jumped me on top of a mountain.
And Zach, when you talk about what's fun about Skyrim, and for you it's more about Oblivion, you had problems with Skyrim at this, was the exploring. You wanted to go over that hill and see what was there and go into that dungeon. That's how I feel about Link to the Past. It's directing me somewhere, and it's a much smaller place to explore, but if you sort of ignore the technical limitations, Link to the Past size-wise is the equivalent of, in 1992, is the equivalent of Skyrim in 2011.
There's nothing to explore. You're not finding anything
new.
There
is a crap ton to explore
yeah,
in this game.
You are just wrong about that.
I open up the map, I've seen the whole world. There's nothing else to see.
There are so many things hidden in the map, though, that you have to go find. There are puzzles to solve on the map.
What you are saying is what I feel about Skyrim. And I just feel like Legend of Zelda, for me, gives me the same experience, but in a way I can enjoy.
I cannot agree that there is nothing to explore in Link to the Past. Just because you see the entire map doesn't mean that you... That's like looking at a topographic map of Colorado and claiming you've been to Colorado.
There's no... Yeah, you can say there's puzzles to find. There's crap to find in there. It's not quite the same feeling I get when I'm running through Oblivion or the Wastes and Fallout. It's because it feels like I'm moving through an area.
Yeah,
it feels
I can see
like
that. And is that just because it's a more realistic simulation?
Well, and what I'm saying is, when I play Legend of Zelda, that's how I feel. And when I play Fallout and Skyrim, I don't.
I don't know. I get it from both. But...
Yeah, well, I'm just saying it's a taste thing. And I think that The Legend of Zelda is an influence on Skyrim in some subtle ways.
Well, I think it's an influence on basically every game made after it.
I think a lot of games. I don't think...
Street Fighter!
I don't think Street Fighter took any... That wasn't the example I was going to go for, but I think it's apt. I don't think StarCraft took anything from this game.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think a lot of games did. And I think Grand Theft Auto took a little from this. Maybe more from the first Zelda.
And probably more from Metroid.
A lot of stuff took from Grand Theft Auto. And obviously Ocarina of Time took from this. And I feel like a lot of things take from Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I think more stuff borrows directly from Ocarina than from this. But...
And I think it's just because Ocarina is a 3D game that does a lot of stuff really well in a world where we were still trying to figure out what makes a good 3D game.
And I think we've pretty well figured that out.
Yeah,
I think we figured it out so well that we basically don't make 2D games anymore. Like
there's a reason
developers.
For that.
There is no good reason for that.
They don't sell as well.
Yeah, the reason for that is people like the pretty graphics.
And I like the pretty graphics of Link to the Past, but... I am definitely in the minority there. Well, I shouldn't say I'm in the minority. I'm in the minority that I would put them up against Skyrim and say, I think this is prettier.
Technically,
there are more colors.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I like about it, honestly. It's cartoony, that's for sure. It's not as realistic, but I like the colors, basically.
What about Wind Waker, then?
I don't know why I can't get into Wind Waker.
The only difference between, like, Skyrim... Oblivion would probably be a better comparison point to... Link to the Past, in that because Skyrim is supposed to be a frozen wasteland.
That's true. They definitely accomplished that.
Fallout is not as pretty as this game. Well, Fallout is a barren wasteland after a nuclear war.
My problem is that every video game is a barren wasteland after a nuclear war these days. But you have a fair point. And a lot of people say that about Morrowind. Morrowind is this crazy swamp world That's way more interesting than this frozen tundra with these mountains everywhere.
That's a problem I have with Skyrim. Too many freaking mountains to walk over.
So anyway, Link to the Past.
Yeah.
Not as good as Mega Man X, in my opinion, or Super Smash Bros. Or Symphony of the Night. I didn't have quite as much fun with it as I had with New Horizons, but that was because that was a total sleeper hit that I didn't expect to anywhere. Thank you. Although I actually might have played that because it popped up on the Wii U Virtual Console, and it's usually only the cream that gets there.
Well, when you throw enough darts at a wall, eventually you're going to hit the bullseye.
But I still think this is one of the best games we've played, and I was very happy to finally have an excuse to play through all the way.
I think I actually like this better than Mega Man X, although I find Mega Man X more replayable.
75% of the Zelda games I've played, I've hated.
Did you really hate this one?
Spending 2 hours and not getting to the point where it was apparently 3 hours into the game and beating the first dungeon? Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, Tyler, what are we going to play next week?
So, I don't think there even, well, there probably exists something like this. In fact, Kirby, or one of the newer Kirby games, has a minigame like this. But we're going to go to the Weird West and play Wild Guns.
I like the Weird West. That's where Will Smith and Kenneth Branagh hang out together and fight robot spiders.
Now, oh, wait, do we get to kill Cody's character?
No, you do get to kill other robot things. No Indians, though. So whatever the hell else he was, I can't even remember his other characters. But anyway, next time and last time, it's Wild Gun.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2014.
All the video games and other media mentioned herein are copyright of their respective owners.
Unfortunately, I don't own Square Enix. You can contact us at ltovg at lasttimeonvideogames.com or Tyler at lasttimeonvideogames.com
or Jeremy, G-E-R-E-M-Y, at lasttimeonvideogames.com
and the best one, Zach, at lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Our primary source of interaction is lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can find all sorts of written material in addition to the podcast.
If you want to follow us on Google+, plus.google.com/plus/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you're one of those weird people who uses Twitter, we are at LTOVG.
Quick press X. Too late. You failed. The podcast is over.
Oh, man, I finished something recently. What was it?
Gah.
Brain. Brain more.
Zombies?
Oh.